So, hi everybody. My name's Jess, Jess Sargent. I am sitting in the kitchen of BJ Edwards, author of Stalking the Shadows, and really just here to have a chat about his book, which is available on Kindle and other ebook formats. And I think if BJ might correct me if I get it wrong, but you can find out more at www.bjedwards.co.uk, which will take you to his site with all kinds of links. But really the purpose of this chat, which is over a cup of tea in his kitchen, it's nice and informal, is I'm about to do the narration for the audiobook of Stalking the Shadows. And from my personal perspective, what I would like to do is just get some background information and really get to know sort of how the book came about, and it'll help me put my sort of voices together and get the narration good. But it also gives BJ an opportunity to tell us a little bit about his book. So, hi BJ.
Hello there, Jess.
I'm really excited about the project that we've got coming up and the recording that we'll be doing. Not exactly sure when, but very soon.
I am too, because Matt Brown, who's the producer for the company Living Audio, is, in my opinion, a very talented producer. And we listened to a variety of different auditions or voice tests, and from actors and readers. But we certainly found yours to be very strong indeed, because where you came across particularly strongly was your ability to really feel the emotions behind the words. And as a writer, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the reader to feel, to sense the emotion, because ultimately at the end of the day, writing and reading is about emotion and feeling.
I'm delighted you liked my audition. I'm very keen to be able to put that feeling into the book when I record it. It's very important to me that I give your book the very best I can give it. And as such, I suppose that's why we're here in a little sort of in a way, because the more I can get from you to sort of help me develop these thoughts and sort of the different ways I can read things and get the mood of the book, the better. So can you perhaps, as a starting point, tell us really what your inspiration was behind this book in the first place?
I wanted to write something about my passion, which is really anthropology, archaeology, theology, and warfare, battle, weapons. My first book, Mythmakers, that hopefully will be re-released soon, was set in the Bronze Age. And when I wrote that book, I had a lot of research, a lot of ideas, a lot of characters left over. And I wanted to find an environment for them to flourish. So I wanted to find them a place that was a canvas rich enough for my palette, if you will. So the Mesolithic seemed to me the obvious choice, because it's a time of flux, a time of change. The environment was changing. The ice sheets were retreating. It was warming up. The animals were migrating and changing their patterns. Mankind was changing the way in which he lived and died and ate and hunted and defended himself. And his religious practices were evolving. So for me, the Mesolithic was a really interesting time, because it had enough potential for me as a writer to make it interesting.
I think that's very evident from the way you've written the book, in that there is so much change happening. There's changes on different planes, on different levels. It's forcing the characters to change their lives. And these changes are obviously helpful in the development of the characters themselves. And there are obviously a wide sort of number, a great number of different characters. How did you come up with these different sort of characters for the book, the protagonists, the antagonists? How were you influenced in their creation?
Well, some of them came about through logic. around the Mesolithic times, which for the record was between 12 and 10,000 BC in Northern Europe, people were living in defined tribal groups, and as such, they had defined roles within those groups. So some of the characters were done for me. So we have hunters, we have warriors, and we have a chief, and we also have Neanderthal man, who lived in parallel to human beings at that stage in history. For a while, they lived around the same time. They even interbred. We still don't know exactly why Neanderthal man died out, but one reason certainly could be the impact of climate change or interbreeding or being hunted out by mankind, by humans, because if they killed all the game, or they simply, the Neanderthals simply didn't have the ability to farm, because farming was becoming something, certainly hunting and gathering was becoming more part of life rather than just hunting. So Neanderthals, we have warriors, hunters, we have a shaman, because this is really the dawn of magic. Man is beginning to blink his way out of his cave and look at the sun and the moon and the stars, look at animals, think about life and death in a slightly different way. We know from cave art that men have more defined religious belief in the Mesolithic than before. So we have a shaman, hunters, warriors, and gods. We have gods because at this time man is thinking more about himself and what's out there. Mm-hmm. So cerebrally, mankind is stretching its legs and finding its feet.
You described very much an historical setting for the book, but as you've mentioned, there are gods, there are also mythical animals, there's magic. So how would you put this sort of together as a genre for a listener who is wondering sort of how to categorise your book? How would you do that?
Well, in the past, my first book I called fantasy, but the problem with that was that everyone said, like Lord of the Rings, like Discworld, like Harry Potter, and the answer to those three things is no. I call it historical fantasy, or historical adventure fantasy, really, because unlike the three other books I've just mentioned, or things, this is set in a very specific time and date and place. So therefore I'm constrained by research, by history, by archaeology, by anthropology. So it's set in Northern Europe around 12,000 years ago. So as such, I have a template to stick to. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of leeway within that template, because I talk about how the horse was domesticated, how man came upon the bow, inventing the bow, two things that are vital to mankind's flourishing. The bow enabled him to hunt different game better, quicker, and the horse enabled him to move around better.
And to interject very quickly, you cover this in your book, but it is fairly important to say that this is part of the fantasy side of your... We know that happened, but your solution to it, your description, yeah, is very much your take on this.
This is where the fantasy comes in. The history is the time, the location, the way in which men behave, the religion, but the fantasy is the characterization of the gods and where they live and how they live, mm-hmm, some of the mythical animals, and the way in which certain things happened. So it's fantasy in that there are gods, there are dragons, and there are unicorns. I mean, they're not main characters, but they're in there for a very defined plot purpose. Mm-hmm. And there are gods, and there are different planes of existence that are fantasy, that are made up, but within a context of history.
So, as a genre, we're talking about this being, I think you've come up with the word before, historical fantasy. When it comes to... You've mentioned Harry Potter, you've mentioned Lord of the Rings, Terry Pratchett... There's magic in these books, as well as yours. How is this the same? What are the similarities? What are the differences?
I think the magic in my book is for a purpose. Rather than just using magic for the sake of it, I mean, Harry Potter, people use magic for everyday things. The magic in my book is quite raw and quite young. It's the birth of magic. It's the time when man is just beginning to harness his own potential. So the magic in my book is raw, is basic, is atavistic. It's based around the earth, the land, the sky, ancestors, spirits. It's shamanic or proto-druid, and it's very raw and very basic. But you know, they don't know it's magic. They wouldn't call it magic necessarily. It's just what happens. It's just how they interact with the world around them, because they've reached a point in their existence where they can start tapping into the wellspring of energy that the earth has to offer.
Mm-hmm. Now, looking at from the historical perspective, you've got some, you must have done quite some research into the setting, and there's some element of belief. So there's a couple of questions I've got here related to sort of beliefs and whether this is something that perhaps maps any personal beliefs from you. And the other one is simply with the amount of research that you've put into it, sort of how long a project has this been for you?
Belief-wise, since a child I've kind of been brought up, quotes, pagan, you know, believed in seasons and cycles and ancestors and respect for the earth and nature. I'm a member of the Order of Bards, Ovates and Druids, so I have if you had to pigeonhole me, I suppose I'd call myself a Druid, because that is the closest description to what I would call myself, what I am.
Mm-hmm.
The book took about 4 years to write, all in all, because there was quite a lot of research in there.
Yeah. That's the kitchen clock.
1 o'clock clock.
Yeah.
But the research took time. The research happened as I went along. But the actual writing of the book, some of it was easier to write than others. Some bits were very easy to write, because some of the characters really began to take on their own identity.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the character of Drashuk, the shaman, was quite easy to write. Troka the warrior, Demek the hunter, Kapok the warrior. Some of those characters are quite easy to write because they seem to manage to tune into them quite easily. Others were harder. Part of the book does echo my own belief system. Part of the book does echo my own understanding of the world, and my understanding of history and anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, you know, it's to be enjoyed. It's not an academic paper. Yes, there is research, otherwise it would just be quite lazy, but the reader can just enjoy it.
This is a very much a novel for entertainment. It's not trying to be an educational treatise. But at the same time, would you want the reader to actually take anything away from the book? Is there anything to learn from the book?
I think there's a glossary at the back, deliberately, because you have in this book mentioned some fantastic things, some beasts from the Pleistocene and Holocene.
Mm-hmm.
That are, and you think dinosaurs are cool, but these beasts are amazing, these huge creodonts and Andrewsarchus and Smilodon and mammoths. There's some great things here to be looked at. So hopefully the reader will read it and look at the glossary and think, God, that's quite interesting. Let me have a look at Google. So I like readers to have a bit of a passion for history,
mm-hmm.
and anthropology. But more than that, and this is really the vital heartbeat of the book, I want people to have experienced feeling and emotion. There's a lot of stuff in this, but a lot of feeling. There's sadness, there's loss, there's excitement. There are things there that I want the reader to experience. There's passages that I've written that are charged with emotion. And if I've done my job right, if I've used the right words in the right order, with the right punctuation, and I've injected the right level of feeling, I want the reader to say, you know what, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not expecting them to read the whole book and say, Christ, that was brilliant, but maybe just sections they can read and say, God, that, you know, my heart beat faster then, or I felt a tear coming to the corner of my eye. Because at the end of the day, it's my job to enable people to feel emotion. Because it's all about emotion and feeling. You can have the best plot in the world, but if you don't care for the characters, if they're not real for you during the time you're reading the book, then you're not going to feel anything. So it's all about feeling.
I want to come back to you in a little while and talk a bit more about characters, but I just wanted to round off a point that you just brought up, in that when I read the book, I was left with the feeling when I put it down that I wanted to read more. There wasn't any more in that book, but I wasn't ready to put the story down completely. So I just wondered if this is a freestanding book, is there going to be more in the future? Where are you leaving the readers on that one?
Well, there's a book set in the Bronze Age. In theory, this is called Stalking the Shadows, Ancient Destiny, Book One. And there's one set in the Bronze Age that is part of the, I call it the Ancient Destiny series, mm-hmm. purely because you don't have to read them in order, there's no pressure, but there are certain elements they have in common.
Okay.
So there is another book that's already written, and a third book called Legacy of the Flames that's already been penciled.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm toying with the idea of doing something even before this or after this, between book one and book two.
So basically, there's more to come. There is more in existence already, and there's still further.
There's more in my brain.
Okay.
There's more in my heart, without trying to sound too odd. And there's more on my computer, if people buy it.
Well, I think that's nice for those of us that have enjoyed reading Stalking the Shadows. That's nice to know, because I'm certainly looking forward to the next one. But to go back to the question I wanted to raise, but I just wanted to mention that first, is looking at the characters. There are a wide range of characters, as I've already mentioned. Do you have particular favourites? Where do you draw up the different aspects of each character? What's your inspiration for creating different personalities and things like this? Because this is something that I need to know as somebody who's about to narrate their voices.
I think with people, characters evolve with their own experiences. You're not, you know, necessarily born bad. You don't wake up one morning and think, now I'm wicked, I will perpetrate a crime.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of grey in the world. And this is reflected in this book, because it's quite lazy just to do black and white. You know, he's good, he's bad, he's good, he's bad. I'd like the reader to know, because I want to know,
mm-hmm.
what drove the character to become good or bad? What drove him to do this act of goodness or wickedness? Because I think you can't have a character in isolation, because we don't exist in isolation. We're moulded by our experience, by our environment. So at my characters, even the ones who appear to do really horrible things, there's always a tantalising ambiguity, because we can say to ourselves, yeah, he did this, but hold on, look at him there, he went through this shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my characters are quite rounded. I want them to be anyway. So you have the warriors and the hunters. Some of them are intelligent, they all have relationships and camaraderie. Others are less intelligent. Troker, who is a warrior, he is just a big honest lump who will do anything for you. If you're his friend, he'll do anything for you, he'll look after you, he'll take care of you. And if you're his enemy, he'll crush your head with a club.
But he's solid and dependable.
Yeah, and I like that.
Yeah.
because there are people in the world like that, and he is like that. There are others who are horrible. There's a character called Jaylep who's horrible. But then you have to ask yourself, why?
Yeah.
So I like the reader to not have, not to be spoon-fed. I like the reader to think, you know, yeah, he did this, and that's not very nice, but he came from this point, and he had this happen to him. So Troker's interesting. Drushuk, the shaman's interesting, mm-hmm. because he's a character who really has hidden in the shadows for a long time, and so he felt able to show people his abilities and his talent and his magic, really. And of course, you've got the gods, who themselves are vulnerable, because yes, they're gods, yes, they operate on a higher plane than human beings, but they're also vulnerable. They also have their own stories, their own stuff that happens to them to make them the way they are.
It's notable, actually, that the characters develop on a human level through the book, and you can see them developing towards perhaps being a good character or a bad character, and how their character is developed by the events that have happened. But the same thing is happening with the gods as well. They're not immune to that.
No, they're not. I mean, I don't put gods on pedestals. They're deities.
Mm-hmm.
They operate on a different level. Yes, they can do interesting things. But they have their petty squabbles too. They have their arguments and their battles. And this book is very much about the evolution of mankind in parallel to the evolution of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
They grow up together, really.
Now, the god characters that you've got through the book, are they purely of your own invention? Are they based on gods that have been part of existing belief structures? or how have you come up with their characters?
Well, Camillus is an ancient British bull-headed god of battle and war.
Mm-hmm.
Can also be identified with Mithras. Of course, all of these gods, you know, are found by other cultures, Roman, Greek, Egyptian, and given their own identities. Some of them are assimilated, some of them are changed. Mm-hmm. But Camillus is a Bronze Age British god. Modron and Ariane Rod, they're female, they're goddesses, and they're identified within Welsh and Celtic folklore, mythology, Druidic belief systems, look at them quite strongly. Balor of the Eye is a god who's seen in Irish folklore, Irish mythology, and along with his sons Bres, Eru and Tethra, the three abominable giants, mm-hmm. who are his sons. So he's mentioned in various Irish sagas, but I take his idea, and I put my own spin on it, my own spin on him, the way he had.
So there is, in other words, the god characters that you have in the book are influenced or perhaps given a framework of existing god characters in belief structures from sort of different cultures around Britain specifically, or Europe, but they're not pure in that sense. You've developed them, created characters for your own fictional purposes.
Yeah, and some of the gods are completely made up.
Okay, so it's a nice blend of fantasy in two senses, that it's mythical, but it's also fantastical.
But it's unashamedly Northern Europe and British.
Well, there's nothing
as
wrong
British
with that.
As you can be during that time.
Fine. Not that obviously the concept of British didn't exist in that time, but regional to this part of Europe.
Yeah,
you mean? Yes.
Absolutely.
I'm very conscious of the fact that we have a limited amount of time that we can talk about this, much as I would like to sit chatting for hours. But as a kind of final question, we've talked about characters, we've talked about all kinds of aspects of the book, and it's been great. People often say that in a book there's always something autobiographical about the author. Are you in this book in any way?
My passions are in this book. Mm-hmm. My passions are ancient history, very, very ancient history, archaeology, anthropology, warfare, battle, religion.
Mm-hmm.
Those things interest me a lot. So my own interests are echoed in the book for the research I've done. But more importantly, I think Drashak, the shaman, echoes a side of my personality. Somebody who is quite intelligent. I'm talking about Drashak. Somebody who understands, but doesn't necessarily want people to know he understands. Somebody who can do things and know things, but is afraid to let that be known for fear of ridicule or persecution. Somebody who wants to fit in, but doesn't always. Somebody who, in some ways, transcends the mundane. So part of him is in me.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I've mentioned him before, the character Troka.
Mm.
He represents part of me too, because he's somebody who's quite straightforward and quite easygoing, quite friendly. So I guess if you want to be slightly psychoanalytical, Drashak represents the art in me, the artistic, the magic, the gentle, the caring. And Troka represents the bloke who goes to the gym and does judo and rows and collects swords.
There's a more physical side.
Yeah.
So there's no one character that encompasses it. You've not injected yourself into the book in one particular person, but you've given different characters little aspects of you, in a sense.
In my other book, excuse me, there is a definite, I mean, I talk about that if and when it happens, but the very definite character who is definitely autobiographical.
Okay.
But that's maybe because it was my first book, and people often say your first book is more autobiographical.
That makes sense. Well, we're going to be running out of time in a couple of minutes, so really I just want to say thank you very much for sitting and chatting with me, and it was a lovely cup of tea as well. This isn't just for general interest. As far as I'm concerned, this has been a really practical exercise. You've helped me have a much better understanding of the book, and as a result, I hope I can do better justice in my narration, and I look forward to cracking on with it. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.